Welcome to Health Connections, a program about people, health, and policy. I'm Brandon Hollingsworth, and today we're doing something a little bit different, so I wanted to offer a preamble. Today we're going to be talking about gun violence, but perhaps not in the way that you expect us to. This is not going to be a show about gun policy or gun control. Too often, when we call for a national conversation on guns and people and violence, it gets bogged down and almost immediately halted by people's different opinions and ideologies, partisanship, and even interpretations of the U.S. Constitution. That is not our purpose today. Our purpose is to examine the demographics of gun violence, who it typically affects, and why it is considered a matter of public health. With that, we'll bring in Dr. Carol Myers of the University of Tennessee College of Nursing, of course, our regular guest here on Health Connections. Dr. Myers, why is gun violence a public health matter?
Gun violence is a public health matter because of the number of people that are killed each year. Let's start by painting a picture. One day in America, 46 children and teenagers are shot. Four of the 46 are homicide victims, and two die from suicide. On the same day, 315 adults are shot. 93 of these die, a greater percentage than the children. Of those 93, here's the picture. 32 are murdered. 58 commit suicide. One dies unintentionally. One via legal intervention. And then the cause for one of those deaths is unknown. Hmm. So adults, 315 are shot and 93 die. And the major reason is suicide followed by homicide. So generally, we see one person on this day killed for every two that are injured. If you look at it a different way, paint the picture with a different brush, gun violence is the number one cause of homicide, suicide, and legal intervention deaths. It's the number three cause of injury-related deaths. And it's the number 12 cause of death overall. So in answer, Brandon, it's because it's one of the major reasons that Americans are dying, and we need to be looking at that just like we would heart disease or communicable diseases.
You're right. There's also a clinical burden, as you put it, for non-fatal firearm injuries. Those are people that have to go to the hospital because they're shot maybe as part of a crime or a suicide attempt or accidentally. And what are some of the costs on the healthcare system?
This is almost mind-boggling to me. We tend to hear about the event, as is true in so many cases, and we don't think about the sequela. But the sequela related to firearm injuries that don't result in death are very onerous. We have about $174 billion annually lost work time, healthcare cost, criminal justice claims, and decreased quality of life. So the victims live with this injury oftentimes for the rest of their life, and it has a very detrimental effect, not only to them as individuals, to their family, and to our country as a whole when we look at productivity and drain on our economy. So this is another reason why I think looking at gun violence as a public health issue might begin to have some people think about this a little bit differently.
There are also, I might add, $700 million in annual inpatient costs as well.
Right. Tip of the iceberg.
When we talk about who the victims of gun violence are, again, the demographics of this phenomenon, one thing that kind of surprised me was how disproportionately men are affected by this than women. Would you walk us through some of those numbers?
Yes. I think the main point, and we'll illustrate it with some data, is that males are the predominant perpetrators of gun violence as well as the predominant victims. So this is more of a male problem. Let's use some data. We tend to look at this as a rate. How many per 100,000 people? In the United States, 19.3 is the rate for males for gun violence deaths, whereas 19.3 for males, we see 3.2 for females. Another point that I'd like to bring out is where we live here in Tennessee. The national rate for males is 19.3, but our rate in Tennessee is 27.7 gun violence deaths per 100,000 people. So we far exceed the national average. We also exceed the national average for women in that our number in Tennessee is 5.2 where the national number is 3.2. What's really startling, Brandon, is when we dice this a little thinner and we look at Black males aged 20 to 29, their rate is 89 per 100,000. So this is the group that is disproportionately affected by gun violence, and that's a major concern. We're talking about our future when we're talking about children and young adults, and that's why I think this is a public health problem that demands our attention.
Typically, what grabs the headlines would be things like mass shootings or gun crimes, drug-related or gang-related. But you've written that the leading cause of firearms-related deaths is actually suicide.
Yeah, I think that was probably one of my biggest surprises, Brendan, as I began to organize the data and to look at it. And it's the number 10 leading cause of death for the entire population.
You mean among the 10 leading causes of death in the United States in general, suicide is 10?
It is. And if you look at certain groups, it's even higher. Let's go back to that day in the life of America. We have 121 suicides per day. We also have one suicide for every 25 attempts. So we're looking mostly at fatalities, but also we have to consider the folks that are either injured in shootings or in suicides. And with suicides, that's one suicide for every 25 attempts. So think about those clinical and other implications that we
talked
about earlier. There
are 24 people who survive on average.
Right.
Wow.
At least that attempt. Now, one of the things that's important, again, what I'm trying to do today is to personalize this and paint pictures. When we look at suicide, who are the major victims? Well, generally it's males, again, and they're in middle age. When we look at Tennessee, where we live, we rank 21 out of the 50 states, and our rate is, you know, again, higher than the national average. So it's a problem. Then I started thinking about my personal experience, people that I know have committed suicide or people who have been affected, and this is borne out in my experience as well as the data that I looked at. 8 out of 10 of the suicides that occur by guns occur in the home. And I don't know why, but that really tugs at my heartstrings when I think about family members finding a loved one that has committed suicide, when I think about just that space, the violation of that space and those memories. But this is true of a lot of gun violence. Most of it happens in the home. It's one of those places that we'd like to think that is safe and maybe even sacred.
Well, we should talk about homicide as well, because this is a part of this puzzle as well. You've written that 4 out of 10 firearm homicides occur in the home. That connects us back to our last point. Give us more information about the demographics of homicide when guns are used to kill others.
Well, again, we've already spoke about the incredibly high homicide rate among Black males. One of the things I'd like to highlight about homicide that I think is important as we try to paint different pictures of what's going on in the United States is this is an area I'd like to compare ourselves to other countries that are like us. 64% of the homicides in the United States are because of guns. Guns were involved in killing someone. If we look at Canada, the country that's next closest to us, their rate is 30.5%. Australia, 13%, and then England and Wales, 4.5%. Now, the reason I bring this up is not because I want to wade into those waters about what should our policy response should be, but this needs to be considered is why are we different?
To bring this back to something we talked about a moment ago, crimes that may be committed at home, acts of violence that may be committed in the home, domestic violence is a big part of this puzzle as well.
But I'd like to talk about domestic violence kind of in two dimensions. One is, you're right, most of this occurs at home. There's an average of 760 Americans that are shot annually by a current or former partner. That's a very high number. 75% of the victims of domestic violence that was committed using a gun are the wives or girlfriends of the male who killed them. That's important, but what's also interesting to me in the second dimension is the intersection between domestic violence and mass shootings. Generally, we think about mass shootings as those with very, very high numbers, when in actuality, Those sort of events only account for a tiny fraction of gun deaths. What we've seen is 95% of the perpetrators of mass shootings, first off, there's a portrait that's being painted, is that they have a history of domestic violence, spousal abuse. Now, it's not often the immediate cause of the mass shooting, which is four or more people that have been shot and killed, but it's often a warning sign. So as a public health person or as a nurse, we think about not only how do we stop this, but how do we prevent it? So that's very important. You know, as an example, the Pulse nightclub shooter's wife relayed to investigators how she had been repeatedly beaten by her husband during their marriage. So let's go a little bit more and look at domestic violence. When we look at multiple casualty shootings, it's terrible that we have all these different categories related to mass shootings. This is where there are four or more people who died as a result. 54% of those mass casualty shootings involve a current or former partner or family member. So we have that intimate relationship, and the victims, 64% are women and children. Although overall, when we look at homicide, women are only 15% of the victims and children 7%. So what does this say? Domestic violence is particularly lethal. And mass shootings, often other people are collateral damage because the target is the partner. So that's something I think that's really important. When we also look at mass shootings, which does not imply that four people have died, but at least one person has died, and four or more have been shot, we see a similar pattern where the perpetrator often is someone that is a partner or former partner of one of the targets. And domestic violence is involved in 10% of these incidents, but 31% of the deaths. So again, my point, domestic violence is particularly lethal. That's a problem.
Some final thoughts from you, Dr. Myers, about gun violence in America from the public health perspective.
It's my contention that we need to start by looking at data about incidence, prevalence, and risk factors, as we would do with any other public health problem. And this is the starting point for formulating policy. Public policy is a government's response to a societal problem. My point is gun violence obviously is a societal problem that we need to address in our country. The portrait that we've tried to paint today, Brandon, of gun violence victims is not a single portrait. Therefore, there is not a single solution, which we always have this rush to, well, we'll do this and that'll take care of the problem. That's not worked very well for us as a country. So my wish, my hope, is that as Americans, we can come together in earnest to forge solutions based on sound evidence, not emotions or politics, and that gun violence should not be politicized, as you mentioned when we started this conversation. This is something that maybe we could come together as Americans and make sure we understand the problem and then come together to find solutions without making it a political issue, because it's a very personal issue.
A lot to think about. Dr. Carol Myers of the University of Tennessee College of Nursing here on Health Connections. Thank you for speaking with us today.
Always my pleasure. Thank you, Brandon.